This week we begin reading Sefer Vayikra, and Vayikra is of course Torah's Kohanim, Leviticus is the laws of the Kohanim, and begins with the laws of the Korbanos, how the various offerings are to be brought. And the first offering which is discussed is the Korban Ola, what we know usually as the burnt offering, the Korban which entirely ascends to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whereas other Korbanos, large parts of it are either eaten by the Kohanim or shared between the Kohanim and the owners, and only selected parts go on the Mizbeach. The Korban Ola is completely going up to Hashem. It's the quintessential Korban in that sense. All brought close, all brought up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it can be brought from many different kinds of things. And the way the Torah sets it up is that Parshas Vayikra begins by speaking about when the Ola is a Ben Bokor, when it's brought from cattle. Then it goes on and speaks about when it's from Min Hatzon Korbana, when the Korban is brought from sheep, and that's Kvasim or Izim, small animals, whether goats or lambs, and then it gives the rules for that, and that brings us up to Sheni. And the second Aliyah of the Parsha is V'min ha'oif kol ayla korbonai, if the offering is going to be from birds, and then it discusses Tayrim and B'nai Yayna, and then it will continue on, you know, within this Aliyah of Nefesh ki sakri korba mincha lasha, to bring a meal offering, an offering of flour and oil. So from calf, cows, to smaller animals, to birds, to meal offerings. On every different level, the wealthier, the simpler, all can participate in bringing these korbanos on one level or another. What I'd like to try to focus in on tonight is a comment of the Ramban that he says here, it was built to some degree on a comment of the Medrash, which we will look at, but for which the Ramban employs a melitza, for which he employs the turn of a phrase, while some could take it as simply a turn of a phrase that the Ramban is choosing to use, but what we're going to try to explore it and see it a little bit more deeply as we probe to understand the idea of korbanos. What the Ramban is trying to deal with is why it is that when it comes to bringing bird offerings, there are specifically two kinds of birds that the Torah suggests that we use, or allows us to use, I shouldn't say suggests, that the Torah allows us to use to bring. One are torim, what we usually refer to as turtle doves, and the other are b'nei yayna, young doves. So those are the two kinds of birds which are brought. And the Ramban explains this sort of in two steps. And what we're going to focus is on the first step. The first step, says the Ramban, Bochra kosa b'shnei minim ba'ela. The Pasuk chose these two species, b'shvil shehein metsuyin, because they are available. Ukroivin lihitofes yoser, and they're easy to grab, they're easy to catch. Kasher hiskiru rabbi seinu, like Chazal explained, in a different context, by sek sovim v'se'izim, the lamb from the young animal from the lambs and from the goats, sheyakriv min hagedelim al evuso, he should offer those that grow up al evuso on his feed bag. V'lo yitzdorech loseis kelov telyoi v'kashtoi lotzu tzayid lohavi, and he will not have to carry his instruments, his bow, his arrow, his various trapping tools, in order to be able to bring it. So the Ramban is saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had us bring korbanos, animals that would be easily accessible to us. And the basis for this is that it's found in the Medrash, where the Medrash says, and this is a Medrash in Sefer Vayikra and Parshas Emor, it's called Parsha Chav Zayin, paragraph Vav, where the Medrash says as follows: Amar of Yehuda bar Simon, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Eser Minei Behemois Masarti Lach. I gave you 10 kinds of behemois. In other words, there are 10 kinds of kosher behemois that are listed within the Torah. So there are many kinds of kosher behemos. However, not all of those kosher behemos are for karbonos. Gimel birshuscha v'zayin einan birshuscha. Of those 10 animals, 3 of them are in your rishus. They're in your control. That you control them naturally. And 7 of them you don't control naturally. Gimel birshuscha, the 3 which are in your rishus, are shor, seh, ksavim, seizim, the ox, the lamb amongst the small amongst the lambs, the small amongst the goats. V'zayin einam birshuscha, what are the ones that are not in your rishus? Ayal, Tzvi, Yachmor, Akov, Dishon, Sov, Zomer. These are the korbanos again which are listed in amongst the permitted animals. Lo hitrachti aleichem, v'lo yamarti aleichem lisyagea bahorim, lohavi lefonai korban. I did not bother you. I did not tell you to tire yourselves out by going and traveling the mountains to bring me these animals. Ke'elu, me'elu she'enon b'shuscha, these that don't naturally sit in your domain. El v'mashe b'shuscha, I told you to bring from the korbanos that you have readily available. Min ha'godel al evuscha, from those that grow on your feed bag, hadohu d'chsiv, shor, ekesev, e'ez. The examples for korbanos are the shor, the kesev, e'ez, the ox, the lamb, the goat. Says the Medrash, I didn't want you to have to tire yourselves out to go and bring me korbanos. I wanted it to be easier for you. So the animals which I instructed you to bring me are the ones which are readily available. Says the Ramban, the same way the Medrash says this when it comes to the animals, it's also true when it comes to the birds. Torim and Bnei Yona are the kinds of birds that come to take roost in the homes and the nests that you make for them. So they are readily available. They do not require serious trapping and efforts to get them. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose for us as korbanos. And we could take this just simply as the Medrash seems to be trying to make it sound, which is that it's a compassionate move of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want us to have to work too hard. He wanted to make the korbanos more easily accessible to us. And that in itself would, of course, be fine. The Ramban, however, uses a melitza. He uses a way of expressing this of his own that is eye-opening and important, and what we'd like to try to focus on, to see it again as more than just a turn of a phrase. Writes the Ramban, Sheyakriv v'nagdelem alevuso, again, like it says by Shoro, Kesev O'ez, he should bring from those that grow up at his feed bag, and are accessible. For lo yitzdorech, and he will not need lo seis kelov telyoy v'kashtoy lo tzutzayid lohavi. He won't have to carry his kelim telyoy v'kashtoy in order to hunt to bring. The Ramban's expression, again, his turn of a phrase, comes from Yitzchok Avinu's instruction, which he gave to Esav when he asked him to go bring him something to eat. When Yitzchak was about to give the brachas, so as you all know, he turns to Esav and he says, I have this special love for you. I mean, this is not the words which he says, but I have this special love for you because of the tzayid, the game that you bring to me, ki tzayid b'fiv. So bring me some game and I will eat it and then I will give you a bracha. So the words which he says is Sona Kelecha Telyucha Vikashtecha Vitseha Sode Vitsuda Litzayit. Sona Kelecha can mean carry your gear. Telyucha Vikashtecha Telyucha would mean your sword, right? Your hanging item. Rashi says that's the term which is used here for a cherev, a sword and your bow. And go hunt for me. Another translation of sona, according to Rashi, is loshen hashchaza, means to sharpen. Sharpen them so that you'll be able to shecht properly. whatever those details are, that's not so much our point, as the Ramban is using this phrase in order to give the example of what the person does not have to do. Doesn't have to go hunting. Doesn't have to go hunting like Esav, who went hunting in order to be able to get things for his father. Now, what's the significance of that? How are we to understand this? How are we to understand that these are the korbanos? These are the only korbanos which need to be brought. I would note to you as well, just for a point of interest, that the first time that the second time that we have korbanos brought explicitly in the Torah, the first time, of course, explicitly is with Cain and Hevel, where Hevel brought from the sheep. The second time that korbanos are brought are when Noach came out from the Teva. And when Noach emerged from the Teva, as you remember, he brought from all of the kosher species. He brought Shiva. He took seven pears into the Teva. And he was supposed to bring, besides for the pear that would be there to sustain the species, just like he had of all animals, the extra ones, what did he do? He brought them on the Mizbech. All the kosher varieties he brought on the Mizbech. Not just sheep and cattle, but all the kosher varieties he brought on the Mizbech. And it's only now that he didn't. And again, we can explain it very simply. Well, Noach, he already had them. He didn't have to go trap them. Noach, these were all things that were coming out of his teva, out of his charge, out of his hands. So for him, it wasn't a bother. So in principle, these could be kosher animals that could be brought as korbanos. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, again, as we say here, didn't want to be matriach, didn't want to bother us. But as Ramban said it, he didn't want to make us carry our tools to go hunting to be able to bring them. And he's using a phrase with Esav HaRasha. And we know, of course, that we couldn't be farther away than we are far from Esav, you know, in the differences between us. And perhaps this idea is not just a compassionate idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to make it easier for us, but he wants to somehow make things different for us than he did for Esav. Esav, yes, he worked hard. When he came back from the field from his hunting, he was oyef. He was exhausted. He was worn out. He was tired. The shepherd is not described as being oyef, as being exhausted. It's a different situation, a different trade. But, you know, sometimes people can be tired and happy. Was Esav frustrated by his tiredness? Or was the hunting in itself, the game, something which was, what do we call it? The game. And it was the challenge. Not always is every exhausting venture something which is, you know, upsetting or difficult or disappointing. So I'd like to try to take a look with you at something which we have here, which would seem to further underscore this idea of the chosen phrase of the Ramban to contrast the offering of korbanos with the hunting that was done by Esav HaRasha. How's that? In the Gemara in Maseches Pesachim, and Daf Nun Dalet, the Gemara is discussing the Asara Dvorim, the 10 things that were created in the last moments of creation on Friday afternoon, Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmashos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had that first Friday, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was working down to the wire, right, so to speak, and these things were Nivru Be'erev Shabbos Bein Hashmashos. And it lists a whole bunch of unusual phenomena, you know, the be'er, the well that produced, the rock that produced water, the mun, and so on. V'yesh Aymrim, and some say, and this is just as you turn the page on Nundalad Amid Beis and Maseches Pesachim, Af Bigdoy Shal Adam Harishon. Another thing that was created in the last moments of Friday were the garments of Adam Harishon. Writes Rashi, what are the garments of Adam Harishon? Shayuchakukais by Kol Min Chaya Ubehema. Because there were, so to speak, engraved, if you can say that about a garment, was engraved upon this garment all kinds of animals. V'nimsar l'nimrod, and this garment ended up being given over to Nimrod. Al-keini amar ki Nimrod gibor tzayid. That's why Nimrod was called the great hunter. V'esav hargoy, and Esav killed Nimrod. V'natloy, and he took this garment for him. L'fika chaya ish tzayid. That's why Esav was such a capable hunter. V'hein shekosu ben achamudas asherita babayis. And he says, and that's what it means, very famous, Rashi makes this famous, when it says in the Torah that Rivka dressed up Yaakov to pretend to be Esav, she dressed him in the garments of Esav HaChamudais that he cherished the most that she had with her in the house. And we say, says Rashi, what were those garments? Those were these garments, the garments that Hashem had made for Adam HaRishon, that had on them all the animals, that made Adam HaRishon able to be the master hunter, and made Nimrod the master hunter, and made Esav, who got those garments, into the master hunter. V'ani shamati, but I heard, b'godav shel Adam HaRishon haynu kosnais ar shahayulai, that the garments of Adam HaRishon were those cloaks of ar, of skin, that he had. Right? Separate, Rashi says, maybe it's the same thing, maybe it's a separate thing. Rashi says, I heard that it was those garments that we're discussing over here when we say the garments of Adam HaRishon. Hashem, after Adam HaRishon sinned, he dressed him, the Pasuk says, in Kosnos Or, and those garments were the garments that we're talking about here that were created Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmashos. So there were garments of Adam HaRishon that were garments of hunting. Garments that were then assumed by what we would consider to be not the best people in the world. Nimrod was a person who rebelled against Hashem, who got the world through the Tower of Babel to rebel against Hashem, who tried repeatedly to kill Avram Avinu. Nimrod was not one of the good guys. And he ended up with these garments of Adam HaRishon. And from him they went to Esav, who we refer to as Esav HaRosha. And these were garments which enabled tzeda, which enabled hunting and trapping. Is this, then Rashi says, you know, there's another alternative, that the garments of Adam HaRishon we refer to are the garments which Hashem made for him, the Kosnos Or. Now what were those Kosnos Or? They may have been, again, these very garments that we have described, that we have described right here. The Medrash, however, says something else. The Medrash says, Uvahem hayu b'chayreis mishtamshim, that these garments were the garments that were worn by the b'choros, by the firstborn, who were the ones who served as the kohanim. They were the ones who served to bring korbanos in the days before Aaron HaKohen was chosen. These were the original garments of Kohuna. The garments that Adam HaRishon wore, those were the original garments of Kohuna. The Medrash elaborates on this. I don't remember exactly where the Medrash is. I think it's over here. The Medrash elaborates on this and describes how, in fact, these garments were handed down generation after generation, and Esav, you know, when he said when he gave up the Bechairah, when he gave up the birthright to Yaakov Avinu, he was giving up the garments of Adam Arisha. Because he said, why do I need it? I don't want to be the one to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why do I need it? I'm sorry, again, I don't have the particular citation from the Medrash right in front of me at this moment. So we have here two presentations about the garments of Adam Harisha, the way they were used. One is that they were garments of hunting, and the other one is that they were garments of kayanim, garments of service. And if you listen to these two versions with a sensitive ear, you hear what the Ramban is saying to us here in this pasuk. An amazing thing. That it wasn't just simply a matter of compassion. God says, well, look, you know, I'm asking them to bring karbanos. It's a big enough pain. I'm not going to bother them that they have to go hunting for it. What we find here, in a certain sense, is two opposites that are presented. The garment of virtue, the garment of the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, versus its antithesis, the garment that is worn by the world's biggest Rishoyim, those who are most opposed to the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Nimrods of the world, the Esavs of the world, versus the Kayanim of the world. And so, to say that Karbanos are brought specifically from those animals that don't require Seder, that don't require hunting, that don't require him, Lisa, Eskelov, Telio, Vekashto, Lutzu, Tzayid, Lahavi, that don't require him to go to use the tools of Esav, to do the methods of Esav, to do the hunting of Esav. Yes, there's a choice which is being made here, that we're not to be the hunters. We're instead to be the ones who don't bring from those. So that's a symmetry or a contrast which we find, which would bring itself out of this comment of the Ramban, of this insight of the Ramban. But that's only the outline. We have to understand it. Okay? The given we've established. And tell me if you're comfortable with the given the way we've established it. That we're pointing out, the Ramban is showing us here, and he's saying it to us here by the birds, but the medrash which he's citing is back starting with the animals. That all of the creatures which were told to bring us karbanos are creatures that don't require the hunter. They don't require the hunter. A kayan doesn't have to be a hunter. A person who's coming to bring karbanos to Hashem doesn't have to be a hunter. That's what we have from the Ramban. We say, okay, so making it easy for us. But then we look here and we see that in Chazal there are two renditions of the garments of Adam Arishain. The garments of Adam Arishain which were made for him, or which he wore, which he donned after he sinned, after he ate from the Eitz Hadas and brought himself down. And there are two versions of those garments. There's a version of those garments that became the garments of the wicked, of the Nimrod and the Esav, of the hunters of the world. And there was a version of garments, which were the garments that were the garments of the Kayan. Those who would serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Garments which would be spurned by Esav, that he would give away because he didn't want the Bechor, he didn't want to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's not just Hashem didn't need us to hunt in order to serve him. But it's almost the opposite. Serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the opposite path than the path which is chosen by the hunter. V'adovar tzorech iyun, and this is a matter which requires understanding for us in order to be able to understand it more fully. And I want to share with you an understanding of this built on some principles that I've shared with some of you before, a very basic core principle to understand, in a certain sense, the structure of the world and the tasks performed within it. And from there, Mir Hashem will try to come to a deeper understanding of these begodim, of these garments, and of these avodos which we have here. Hashem created the world, and the world has within it a hierarchy. There's a hierarchy within the world. The top of the pile of that hierarchy, of course, is supposed to be the human being. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the human being, he created him as the last creature within the world. And he said, we're going to make man and he's going to be in the image of God. And on some level, that means, of course, that just like God is the master of the universe, man is the master of his world. Ha'aretz nasan livnei Adam. And that's what the verse says. The verse says, Na'asadam etzalmenu kidmusenu uredu bidgas hayom uvav hashamayim uvav behemo v'chol aretz v'chol aremes aremes al aretz. And he will rule over the fish of the sea, the animals, the birds, etc. Man was created as the ultimate creation, and kol shata tachas raglav. You placed everything at his feet. He was supposed to be the ultimate creation. He had divinity within him. Hashem blew into him a breath of life. Hashem gave the man a divine neshama. And therefore, of course, he's above and beyond any other creature which is there in the world. However, man's position vis-a-vis that world was to some degree flexible and tenuous. Rashi points it out in the word which is used by the Torah to describe man's control of the world, where it says uredu. Uredu can mean you can control, but when you think of the word redu, what do you think of, especially as we are here 2.5 weeks before Pesach, sorry to scare you. Right, redu shama. Right, we say how many years were the Jewish people in Egypt? Actually, 210. Right, because Yaakov Avinu said, redu shama, go down there. And redu, the numerical value of the word redu is 210. Resh plus Dalet plus Vav, 200 plus 4 plus 6 is 210. Redu means to descend. So it has two meanings. It can mean control, which means you're on top of them. And redu can mean you can be descending below them. And Rashi says it's a deliberate choice that the Torah doesn't say, right? And mishlu, you know, misholu, you know, rule, control, an unambiguous word. He uses an ambiguous word because zacha, if you merit, you will control them. If you don't merit, you will become subject to them. And it doesn't take long to see that. We know that Cain was very worried that he was going to get killed after he killed Hevel. Who was he worried was going to kill him? Hevel wasn't going to kill him.
Anyone who sees me.
Anyone who sees me. Who's anyone? There was nobody else in the world. Who was he worried was going to kill him? Rashi says he was worried that the behemoths and the chayas would kill him. Esmael, previously, they were scared of me. But now that I sin, they're not scared of me anymore. The dynamic changes. The dynamic changes. And man, who is supposed to be above the animal, when man, acts like an animal, when man kills someone else because of whatever arguments they have between them, so then he loses his vaunted position, and the animals don't respect him anymore. In a sense, of course, the same thing is true with the earth. The same thing is true with the earth because a human being, when we look at a human being, we say, okay, well, a human being was created like an animal. He was created on the sixth day with all of the animals. His biology is similar to that of the animals, but Hashem put into him a soul. And if he masters the soul, great. If not, he's just like one of the animals. But an even a more elementary level is that man was created from the earth. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu took this mass of earth and he put into it a soul. And the soul was supposed to control, master the physicality that's there within the human being, as famously was expressed by Kadmainim, Shaloh HaKadosh, and others. Man is called Adam. Why is he called Adam? On the one hand, he's Adam because he's from Adama. But on the other hand, he's Adam, which is Adameh. What's Adameh? Amarti ele albama se'ov Adameh le'elyon. Nebuchadnezzar said, I would say that I would rise up on the clouds, on the platform of the clouds. I will be like God. Now, of course, when Nebuchadnezzar said it, he was saying it with hubris. He was saying it with arrogance. But to be like God, Adam ele Elyon, that's our job. That's what it means when Hashem creates us, b'tzelem Elokim, b'tzelmeinu kidmuseinu, b'dome lo, Adam ele Elyon. V'holachta b'drochav, the Torah will command us in Sefer Dvarim numerous times, go in the ways of Hashem. What do Chazal say? Hevei dome lo, make yourself like. So a human being could be like earth, or a human being could be like God. He could be Adam, or he could be Adam. Which one is it going to be? And when Adam HaRishon pursued eating from the tree of knowledge, what did he go after? He went after the earthy part within himself. And that's why the Torah says that ultimately the earthy part within himself will triumph. And he's told, you're going to die. Why? Because you're dust. Your earth, and you'll go back to the dust. And he was told that he would have to toil to work the earth to get it to produce. Before he sinned, he didn't have to. The earth, the earthiness within the human being was subservient to the soul within the human being. And so the earth from which the human being was drawn was also subservient to the human being. And it produced for him. But when he sinned, Arura ho'adama bavurecha, the earth is cursed relative to you. You're going to have to toil to bring from it things all of the days of your life. As Hashem said to Cain, loisaisif teis kaichalach, the earth will no longer offer you its strength. You've lost the mastery over the earth. The earthiness within the human being, the animal within the human being. In a certain sense, when it's to some degree allowed to take over, everything changes. And what changes, changes internally within the human being, and it changes as well externally. And the way it changes externally is, as we just said, well, when it comes to the animals, they won't respect the human being anymore. They don't recognize a human being as higher than they because the human being isn't acting higher than they. And when it comes to the earth, the earth doesn't so readily submit to the human being and just offer its goodies to the human being. And this is the need to work the soil, to be a farmer. And this is the need to hunt. The two jobs that Esav had. Lahi Esav, Ish Yodea Tzayid. Esav was knowing the art of hunting. And he was an Ish Sade, and he was a man of the fields. Whereas Yaakov was an Ish Tam. He was a man of Tamus, of simplicity, of truth. Yoshev Oholim, who dwelled in tents. The Ibn Ezra says, what does it mean that he dwelled in tents? So we're used to that means the tent of Shem and Aver, the tent of study, the tent of prayer. The Targum even translates that way. Says the Ibn Ezra, a shepherd lives in a tent. The simple description of the contrast between Yaakov and Esav was that Esav was a hunter and farmer, and Yaakov was a shepherd. Shepherds who pitch their tent someplace, let their sheep graze there for a while, then the field is empty, and they uproot their tent and they move on to someplace else, where again they pitch their tent and shepherd their sheep. Yaakov ishtam yoshev olim. What's the difference between them? It's like the difference between Cain and Hevel. Hevel was a Rayat sign. He was a shepherd. And Cain was Oved Adama. Cain worked the earth. And Rashi says the reason why Hevel was a Raya Tzayin, why was Hevel a shepherd? Because the earth had been cursed as a result of the sin of Adam Arishon. He didn't want to work the land. The earth had become something else, had been transformed into a stubborn earth which was cursed and resistant to man, not subordinate to man. As the earth inside of man had been insubordinate, the earth outside of man became insubordinate. And Cain didn't want, Hevel didn't want to go there. He didn't want to spend his life working on something which was that which had been corrupted, the uphill battle of the sin. So instead, what did he choose to do? Cain did. Cain embraced that work, like Esau would embrace that work. But instead, he was a shepherd. Because sheep didn't get the message somehow or another. They didn't get the email that said, you're not supposed to be deferential to man anymore. Sheep are still sheepish. They're still lemelech. They follow. They follow man. And Hevel said, there's one part of creation that's left that shows deference to the human being. There's a shred of dignity that's left to a human being where he still is above the rest of creation. That's where I want to be. And that was Hevel's choice. And that was Yaakov's choice. And that was Yaakov's choice. If we'll think back for a moment to Noah bringing korbanos from all of the animals. Noah, we said, okay, so Hashem didn't want to bother us to hunt, but by Noah, Noah didn't have to hunt, Shkoyach. But it was more than that. It was Noach who was given the right, for the first time, a human being was given the right to eat animals. Remember? When Noach came out of the Teva, Hashem said that you're able to eat animals. It didn't happen before. And the Ramban explains because, hey, now it was very clear, all these animals were saved on account of this human being. So clearly there was a hierarchy between the man and the animal. And the moments when Noach came out of the Teva, when all these animals were indeed subordinate to him, was that moment. It was that moment. It was a moment when, in fact, all of them would be, in that sense, suited for korbanos. Because that's the contrast of the korban and the hunter. The korban is that where the person comes before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he says, I'm doing something that only a human being with a soul is able to do. I'm taking this animal and I'm offering it to Hashem. And just like we said a few minutes ago, that when it came to the animals outside, man's relationship with them changed because his relationship with the animal inside changed. Man was, in many ways, an animal, but given a divine soul. And the divine soul was supposed to be above the animal. The animal would, not just the animals outside, not just the lions and tigers and bears, but the body of the person itself would defer to the soul, to the higher part of him. But when man sinned and ate from the Eitz Hadas, that's exactly what didn't happen. The korban is to bring that back. To make service of Hashem once again supreme. To make the animal serve the divine. Outside and inside. Outside on the Mizbeach and inside within the human being. And therefore, the Torah tells us to take of those animals that reflect this hierarchy, that accept this hierarchy. Not the animals that you have to go hunt down in the manner of Esav and Nimrod. That's game. That's going and finding something which is inherently not ready to accept. That's not the right thing, it seems, to bring as a carbon to Hashem. We saw that in Medrash there are two versions as to what those clothes of Adam HaRishon were. Avdigdash of Adam HaRishon. There's one version that the clothes of Adam HaRishon were clothes that became clothes of hunting, clothes that would be worn by the wickedest people in the world, by those who rebelled against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who wanted, like Nimrod. What did Nimrod do? He built a tower of Babel. He wanted to build a tower from the earth that would be high and be able to triumph over HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He wanted the earth to overcome the divine, the spirit. Esav said, Hinei anochi halech lamus. I'm headed to death. I'm dust. I'm going back to the dust. The earth will triumph over the spirit. That's the world after Adam HaRishon ate from the Eitz HaDaas. And in that world, in a certain sense, yes, when Hashem, when Adam HaRishon has garments, the garments of Adam HaRishon are the garments that somehow enable this fallen man to still find some way to outsmart, to overcome all of those animals. Despite his fallen spirituality, he's still, man's very smart. He'll trap, he'll find ways. You know, the greatness of man was manifest in Nimrod. They were great. They built a skyscraper. You see what people are able to do? You see how people are able to ascend to the heavens? They built skyscrapers. But that's not the way we're supposed to ascend to the heavens. Humans will always want to ascend to the heavens. They'll say Adam el Elyon like Nebuchadnezzar. Or they'll say Adam el Elyon like a tzaddik. I'm going to be like God, like Nebuchadnezzar. I'm going to be master of everything. Or I want to be spiritual like God, selfless like God. Adam le'elyon. And when Adam HaRishon ate from the Eitz HaDaas, two roads opened up before him. So they were there before to some degree with his Bechira. But there are two roads which are now more pronounced. Two roads which are resulting from the sin, so much more open to him taking one of those two roads. One road is the road of the hunter that now has a world which is wilder and woolier than the world previous. And he goes out into that world, not to tame it. The hunter doesn't tame the animal. The hunter just triumphs over the wild animal. Says, I got it. That's the one. And that's the tower builder. Human greatness as the ability to outsmart the behemoths that don't come easily. Human greatness in being able to build a better plow to be able to somehow relieve us of being slaves to the ground. And then there's another version. And the other version is, well, you know, a human being, even after he sins, he has dignity. He has dignity, the dignity of a human being. And he wants to be covered, wants to wear clothing, because he's not an animal. And he realizes that inside this physical body that has somehow taken on a life of its own, there's a soul And in a certain sense, that soul is ashamed that the body has a life of its own, that the body doesn't always just follow the dictates of the soul, but has its own appetites and its own ways, and the earth is not completely subject to the spirit. And because of that, the human being, with the divine soul within them, wears a garment to cover themselves up, to restore the kavod of the human being. Adam biyakar v'loyalin nimshal kabeim ois nidmu. Right, the pasuk says in Tehillim, man in his yakar, in his honor, he didn't even stay overnight in that honor. On the sixth day he sinned. On the end of the sixth day, in the last hours of the sixth day, he needed clothing. But that clothing was there. Rav Yochanan would call his clothing mechabdusei. That which brought him dignity. You know, the Midrashim, the Rishonim, all ask, why did Hashem have to make Adam HaRishon clothes? He already, after he sinned, he realized he was uncovered, and they made for themselves out of fig leaves, things that would cover their private areas. And the answer which they all give is, okay, that's very, very basic. But he needed, Hashem said, I don't want you to just be basically covered. I'm going to make for you a garment that you could walk around in, that you'll have dignity with. And that's the other version. And that garment is the garment of the Kayan. That's the Big Day Kahuna. That's what the Medrash says. The two paths which were open before Adam HaRishon, before, of course, he had Bechira, he could sin, but he was divine. But now, one path was so much larger. And there are two aspects to the garments of post-chet. One that enables man to now make his way into the thick of the forest, into the wild and woolly, earthy world. And one that somehow brings him back to Gan Eden, that recognizes that despite the fact that he ate from the tree of knowledge and he gave the earth more sway within himself, but the soul is still there. And dignity has to be preserved. And that's the garments of the Ovid. That's what I wanted to suggest to you here today. When the Ramban makes this comment, which the Medrash already made, that Hashem has us bring as korbanos those animals that we don't have to work hard to be able to get. But the Ramban says it's in his Melitza, he chooses it's not just to work hard. It's to hunt, to trap, like Esav. This is the antithesis of that. Instead, we find our shelter in the one part of the world, in the animals, in the birds, that respect man. That somehow are that little bit of that which is preserved, the soul, so to speak, of the material world, that still preserves that original hierarchy, that original recognition of the dignity of the human being that remains. And it is that garment of Adam HaRishon that we don in order to be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, we very often find ourselves when we're learning Parshas Vayikra thinking about Pesach for good reason. Right? Except in leap years when Vayikra could be before Purim. But Vayikra is always, you know, 2 weeks before Pesach. Tzav is always Shabbos HaGadol. Okay, except in a leap year. And this year, of course, is the same as we Vayikras, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And when we left Mitzrayim by virtue of one mitzvah, and the mitzvah was to bring a korban. And we know how the Egyptians, you know, worshipped the animals, and you know, it was a big thing for them that we went and we offered them. But it's not just that they worshipped the animals. the pasuk refers to the Mitzrayim, and it says about them, "Asher b'sar chamayim b'saram v'zirma susim zirmasam." Their flesh was the flesh of donkeys, and their stream, their life force, was the life force of horses. They're compared to behemoths. The Mitzrim were compared to behemoths. The Mitzrim were somehow so physically, so materialistic, so drunk on their lust, their desires, that they themselves were animals. They also practiced Adam el Elyon. They wanted to be like God. And the God they worshipped was a reflection of that fantasy of their own, of being the animal. And that's why when the Jewish people, when we slid back in the Egel Azov, in the story of the golden calf, and we slid back into worshipping like they did in Mitzrayim, what does it say? What does the pasuk say in Tehillim? Vayamiru es kivoydam betav nishorech alesev. They traded in their dignity for the shape of an ox that munched on grass. Meaning that when we worship the animal, we are forfeiting our own covet, our own dignity. The goal of the korban was to be a human being that transcends the animal, that offers the animal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Big Day Kahuna, in the garments of the Kayan. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos that Shloisha She'ochlu al Shulchan Echad, if three people sit at a table and they don't say Divrei Torah, it's as if they ate from the offerings of the dead. The three who sit at a table and they say on it Divrei Torah, it's as if they're eating off of the Mizbeach. Kilu achlu mishulchan shamak. And the idea is that when three people sit at a table and they eat, but they don't eat like the Eitz Hadas, eating, deviating from Hashem. But at the table where they eat, they say words of Torah. They want to immediately lift it up. That's a korban. That's showing that the human being is very much not the animal. So we know that when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, they brought a korban. But to us, that's a distant memory. For us, the way we celebrate Yetzias Mitzrayim is we have a Seder. Now, not every time the three Jews sit around the table do they say Divrei Torah. Sadly, we're all not that good at it. We sometimes will sit around the table and we'll talk about, I don't know, the weather, sports, politics. Who knows? There's one time when everybody sits around the table, a real table of a feast, and they say Divrei Torah, everybody. And what's that? That's the Seder. That's making it into a Mizbeach. That's dressing in the garments of dignity. The kittel, which I mentioned to you before, from David Cohen, was the garments of kahuna of Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, when Moshe Rabbeinu served as a kohen, when he wore a simple white cloak. Because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make that choice, turn in that direction, to restore that dignity of the human being, the soul over the body. We don't want to go hunting. We don't want to enter the world that has been corrupted, where spirit doesn't reign. We only want to go where the spiritual reigns. We only want to bring to the table, so to speak, the words of Torah to raise everything up and to raise ourselves up along with it. That's our Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's how we restore the Yakor, the glory of the human being, of Adam HaRishon, within ourselves as it was meant to be.